Okay, I propose we resume our meeting, and we're going to resume our discussions on dynamic risk management. Floor to Russ.
Gary there. So agenda paper 4C, titled A Change in Risk Management Strategy. The purpose of this paper is to discuss how an entity applying the DRM accounting model should treat a change in its risk management strategy. More specifically, the paper discusses how a change in the risk management strategy will impact the statement of profit or loss not recorded in other comprehensive income. Paragraphs 7 and 8, we have discussed what a change in input is and what a change in assumption is, and the implications of these has been discussed in Agenda Paper 4B. In paragraphs 9 through 13, the staff explain how a change could occur, change in risk management strategy could occur, and highlight the question about what should be done with the remaining accumulated balance in OCI. In paragraphs 15 through 27, the staff consider three alternatives, and in paragraph 28, the staff recommend alternative 3, as the other approaches imply a change in the reclassification pattern, which could either accelerate or decelerate, including amounts related to alignment and profit or loss. With that, I'll ask the board if they agree with the staff preliminary view in paragraph 28, that changes in risk management strategy that require a change in the entity's target profile should be accounted for as described in alternative 3.
Harry?
I have a geeky question on the detail, which is in paragraph 13, as you're discussing outlining, let me try for a third word choice, illustrating, how somebody puts into effect a change in strategy. You talk about them terminating the swap, but it's actually done by entering into an offsetting swap. And so just in terms of understanding how you're thinking about the original one that's now outside the risk management strategy and the offsetting one that's been entered into to cancel it, are we saying that both would now be outside the designated profile and so both of them would be accounted for as fair value P&L? Because when you said that it would be canceled, it wasn't actually canceled, it was offset.
Yeah, I think what we left it a little bit open because if an entity chooses to terminate, then they can terminate. If they choose to offset, they can offset. And an entity can choose to put, in this example, swap 2 into the model, or they can choose to not put it into the model. So I think the comment is if I didn't really want to comment on telling people what they should be designating and not designating, just leaving that saying, well, the designation choice is yours. And so if you put swap 2 in or out, that's up to you. I think we did comment in the paper that we've commented the de-designations of derivatives, their qualifying criteria around that. And I think we did make a comment in this paper that we think this, you would be able to de-designate derivative 1 because there has been a change in the strategy, and so you should be able to de-designate in that instance. So,
and so when you de-designate, does it go outside the model and become a fair value P&L?
Yes.
Okay. Because I was looking at this and wondering if actually we were building up within the designated.
Oh, okay. No.
Within the designated swaps, the terminated one and the offsetting one, and they both become part of the model. And what you're saying is they move out of the model, and you're just not going to tell somebody how to get rid of that exposure. I agree with not telling them how they achieve the cancellation, but I don't want the implication that the offsetting one also goes into the model because the economic effect is expected to be offset of the two derivatives.
I mean, I think what we said in the paper is that an entity could choose to put swap 2 in the model if it wanted, because they have the choice to designate. So they could do that, but we're saying that we're not telling you to do that or not do that. So
if you do that, let's say you do that, you would be caught by the same tests, the same, imperfection tests that are within the model, mm-hmm. and the two swaps will most probably cancel each other out.
We'd expect them to.
Yeah. If not, you will pick up the noise in the imperfection.
Okay.
It really doesn't matter. It's your choice because designation of derivatives is a choice.
OK. Okay. Okay. This is a detail that doesn't impact my analysis of your overall recommendation, but I think I want to
understand
it and then think a bit longer whether there's anything I don't understand yet that would make me uncomfortable with this layer kicking around that is the original and cancellation transactions that are still being in the model.
Yeah. Okay.
Sue?
I agree with, I think, where you've landed in terms of alternative three. But I just wanted to confirm my understanding of something in paragraph 27 where we talk about in alternative three, so the suggestion or the recommendation is that you keep the old reclassification pattern. And I think I agree with your logic. But just to understand what then would be reflected in the accounting and P&L in particular. So I had an old strategy, and now I've changed the strategy. By continuing to have the reclassification that related to the old strategy still coming through in the reclassification mechanics, is it clear what the effects of the current strategy are in the P&L? Or do we end up with a sort of mixture of the old strategy and the new strategy coming into P&L?
I mean, you'll have a blend coming into P&L because you'll have, to simplify, you'll have the perfectly effective new strategy following the reclassification pattern as we've agreed, and then you have the old reclassification pattern continuing to go through as well. So you would, again, I think perhaps we would comment to show the impact of what's the change impact of the strategy. Maybe that's, again, something to be discussing during.
I think ultimately it would help me to see how that interaction might work, so I've got a better picture, because I find it hard to visualise just without anything concrete, just to know how the interaction between the two works. And so I think ultimately when we look maybe at the presentation and disclosure, I'll be interested to see what the combination looks like and whether, because of that combination of old and new, we need to think about some sort of separation so that it's apparent what the current strategy is and what the consequence of the old one is.
What's the runoff and what's live,
Thank you, Hans.
I was just saying it's an interesting, absolutely, bring back, just wanted to make a point. You see, with the runoff going through, Sue, and that's coming to Mary's point and everything, you have swaps which have pulled out. Mm-hmm. There's also a countervailing effect that comes up. So, yes, we will show that. So there are different plays going on here.
First of all, I will not object to the staff's proposal based on the decision we made at June board meeting. I have two comments. One is that the staff's proposal only apply for those changes of risk management for valid reasons.
Yeah.
So I think in this case, what's the meaning? How to define the valid reasons?
Yeah, that's what I was
become critical issue. Whether it's because of some market environment changes, because of some regulatory environment changes, whether it's because of management team or management strategy changes. So I think we needed to define what's the meaning of the valid reasons, whether those reasons out of control of the entity could be regarded as a valid reason, or whether it's under control of the management could be regarded as a valid reason, because I think it's very, very important, because different reasons will result in different accounting outcome. This is the first comment I would like to make. Second is about the alternative three. Alternative three, all those amounts accumulated in OCI will be reclassified over the life of the previous target profile, not the new target profile. So suppose there are some extreme, cases. The previous target profile, the life of the previous target profile lasts 50 years. So the first year, the entity designated some derivative to try to, transfer the assets profile to be equal to the target profile. But at the end of the first year, maybe some very significant events happen, such as financial crisis, something like that. So there is a huge loss or massive loss incurred at the first year. So that means there's a huge loss in recognized in OCI. And then at the second year, the company decided that you needed to change our risk management strategy, because it seemed that the first year risk management strategy failed because there are huge loss, you know, incurred. So they changed a new risk management strategy, got new target profile. But now it means that those huge loss will be deferred, amortized in the next 49 years.
49 or 14?
Whatever.
48 or 49, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that this kind of loss will be, you know, deferred, whether this kind of accounting treatment still provide useful or timely relevant information to users. So this kind of, it looks like an impairment, you know, loss. And, you know, sometimes available for sale, such as we allow the companies use, you know, to recognize those loss in OCI. But once those loss are big, you know, maybe not allowed to be amortized, to be deferred in the future. So I'm thinking about this kind of approach, whether there are extreme cases happened and the huge loss recognized OCI, whether any, you know, measures could be.
Credit losses will invalidate.
Yeah.
That's what we have clarified. Taking your example, Jinchao, if you have, let's say, a profile of 50 years, which I'm not saying it's impossible, remember it's got to be existing assets because it's impossible to show highly probable for 50 years. So you have existing assets and liabilities maintaining your profile, and on which you have done a hedge and you have deferred it. So when we say you can recycle, the other conditions also have to be met, that those asset cash flows and other cash flows are still in existence, and that is only when you will be able to recycle. So the economics of the assets and the liability profile, which created the target profile, are still there for the balance 49 years. That is why that's the only circumstance where we will allow the recycling over the balance period. So yes, there is a deferral, but I think according to the staff proposal, that deferral is justified because you have met through the reasons for doing that deferral because you have that asset profile in existence. The cash flows haven't gone away.
So does that mean, based on what you just said, Kumar, that in Jingchao's very extreme example, if you basically thought you weren't going to get the cash flows anymore on that portfolio, and that's an extreme situation, but let's just go with it for the minute.
Yeah.
Firstly, it's a disqualifying event.
Yes.
But secondly, because the cash flows on those assets are no longer expected to occur, you wouldn't be allowed to recycle over the 50 years
anyway.
You
would have to flip.
Yeah, I think we've agreed to that. If the cash flows are no longer highly probable, you must reclassify immediately.
Immediately.
Yeah.
So because you don't think those cash flows are going to come in anymore, you wouldn't actually be able to wait the 50 years anymore?
You can't.
But suppose those cash flows still last next, 48.
I agree. Then you would be able to, because we still think that gives the economics of what that swap was doing for the first 1 year.
Gary?
Thank you. Before I begin, I wanted to say I thought a great set of papers for this meeting, you know, by the entire DRM team. Let me set the stage. Maybe a year ago, I think we had said when we began, changes in the risk management strategy are expected to be infrequent. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Good. That helps. The next question is going to ask. I'm really getting into how do you operationalize it. You know, we've got a definition of risk management strategy. You know, I suspect, again, just sort of keeping it to major banks, would everybody agree on a common risk management strategy? Because I'm getting into, do we need examples, or how far do we have to develop this thought?
I think it's difficult to comment that every bank is going to agree on what's a common risk management strategy. I think the broadest stroke you could derive is that someone's going to be measured, that they're going to be managing things on a present value basis, or they're going to be measuring it on a non-present value basis.
Because I'm thinking is eventually, sooner or later, when we're done with the core model, we're going to go out and test it. I think part of it has a common understanding of what is a risk management strategy. And if your risk officer has a very different definition than your chief accounting theoretician, yes, that's when you start bumping into you know, cost to comply and getting common and comparable results.
Yes.
And, you know, I was sort of thinking, you know, where could you run into these things? You know, appreciate a major change in the macroeconomic environment. You know, okay, some things are obvious. You know it when you see it. But, you know, hopefully we don't have any more financial crises. But, you know, most changes happen more slowly, you know, than a disaster, you know. And so things do change. So the questions I think we got to think about, what if there's you're starting to aggregate or disaggregate portfolios greater or less than you used to, and therefore you buy a different type of derivatives or something. Is that a change, or is that just operationalizing a larger strategy? You know, I could go on. What if you change the type of derivatives you're using for whatever reason? Is that a change, or is that just, no, the strategy is the same, this is the tool I'm doing it, And what, you know, what's the difference between a change of the strategy versus minor tweaks to the strategy? You know, what is a change or versus just kind of working with it, the volume changes or whatever. And your example in the paper, you said, your management profile goes from 3 years to 5 years. That's pretty easy to understand.
Yeah.
You know, what if it went from, you know, 3 years is now expressed as 36 months and it's every, I'm doing quarterly. Is that a change, or is that just more greater precision? You know, I just think these are the sort of questions we're going to be prepared to answer, if not in the first due process document, but in some place.
Yeah.
We're going to, these are the questions that are coming. Just think around this room and in front of the organization, we have debates. What's the difference between a change in accounting principle versus a change in estimate versus a change in fact and circumstances? We don't agree. We've got two projects on that subject. And that's an, you know, it, so I'm just looking ahead, you know, to what do we need to contemplate, whether it's board decisioning or it's just part of the outreach packages, but that's sort of what hits me.
Thanks, Gary. Absolutely. What you're talking about is, we have said inputs, assumptions, and RMS, risk management strategy changes and how that affects. We need to have clear bucket definitions and how what we mean of those as we go ahead. Absolutely, we'll keep that in mind.
Mary?
I'm just going back to something in Jeff's question. Sue, your response reminded us of the kind of overarching requirement of the highly probable. You know, and you and Kumar said that if the future transaction is no longer highly probable, you have to reclassify out of OCI. And it might be helpful if the staff, maybe not today, could go back and just spell out how these pieces work a bit, you know, a bit more, provide a little commentary, not a proposal, but just an explanation, because I had thought of highly probable kind of in the strictly in the bucket of forecast, you know, of future transactions.
Yeah, that's what we mean.
And I'm thinking, you know, let me take in Jing Zhao's example, that it was something like change in prepayment experience. That, you know, so you have a recognized asset, the prepayable loan, and that's what was the asset profile, and you have a change in prepayment experience that actually, you know, maybe it's a consequent of the reaction to the economic event or something that triggered the loss on his derivatives. So you have recognized a loss on the derivative in OCI, the asset now is behaving differently. Would you still have to reclassify out of OCI the piece that related to the cash flows that you're now not going to get because the loan prepaid earlier than you expected? I'm not trying to do a pop quiz at the table, but thinking about how that interacts with the highly probable future and whether that would make some of that derivative loss.
I don't think this interacts with highly probable because it's a recognized asset and liability. Let's take an asset. If you have a change in prepayment assumptions, as we discussed last time, immediately you will pick up that loss because that's how the measurement goes. There shouldn't be anything in OCI relating to those cash flows that have just been prepaid. That cannot be yes for the measurement. What the question, Jinchao's, which we are coming from, is that the question is that after the prepayment, what you have got deferred relates to the asset that's there. Are those cash flows going to occur? If you still expect them to occur, then you have it. Otherwise, you flush immediately.
But I think even the articulation you just got now helps me settle down in my mind what we're talking about, because you're reminding us that you would have had to take out of OCI in connection with that change in assumption the piece of the deferred, in his example, loss that relates to the cash flows you now no longer expect to get. So it works also if it's a recognized asset.
I don't want to use those words because they bring in the words for that, the different ideas, but yes, exactly that's how it works.
Nick?
Thank you. My question's around the visibility of these amounts, really. So, and I'm trying to get straight in my head what's the status of these amounts. So we've had a termination event, so it would suggest these amounts are outside of DRM. Now,
when you say, what do you mean by amounts?
The amounts are being reclassified from OCI. Amount,
but recognized in OCI.
Recognized in OCI or taken out of OCI?
What I think is it to recognize and then reclassified from OCI, isn't that?
Okay. Yeah. At the termination event, yes.
So that's the should be reclassified over the life of the target portfolio as previously defined, those amounts. So we had a termination event. So these amounts are now outside of DRM. Because it's a termination, but the result from DRM activity, previous DRM activity.
Yes.
And it's just having, perhaps we come to it when we come to disclosures, it's the visibility.
That was my question. Yeah. That was exactly how.
Right.
Just trying to get it straight.
And also not just hanging around, how much is floating into P&L from previous and how much is coming in from active bonds. We will look at that. This is not going to be that simple a disclosure and everything to give because. These things happen, but if not just is from terminations, can happen much more frequently.
And I see if we agree with the staff's recommendation.
14. Yep. Okay.
All right.
Thank you. All done.
Yeah. Near perfect score.
Yes.
Did you want to go to break, or do you want to?
No. We finish everything, I think. Yeah.
You want me to call somebody?